I'm Corinne Botts, and it's June 17th, 2019. I'm at the Hudson Library in Hudson, New York, and as part of the Oral History Summer School program, I'm interviewing Joanne Briggs, who I just met a few minutes ago. Joanne, thank you so much for doing this interview.
Can you
please introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Joanne Briggs, and I am from Columbiaville, New York, and I've lived here for 64 years.
Joanne, can you tell me about a place that's meaningful to you?
My mom and dad's house. I grew up there. I grew up in Hudson. I lived in Hudson for about a year and a half on Warren Street. And then my mom and dad bought a house in Stottville, New York. And I lived there for the rest of my life until I moved out, obviously. And they just passed away a year ago. My dad passed away last week, and we just sold the house. So that house was in my family for 64 years, almost 63.
Can you tell me a little bit more about describing the house, the time you spent there?
Well, it was just a regular, like, old farmhouse kind of a house, and there was a farm in our backyard, so they always had corn, and there was a willow tree, and we climbed the willow tree, and when I grew up there, back then there was snow constantly, so you always were on the pond ice skating or sledding or, you know, something of that nature. And then I have three siblings. One of my brothers is two and a half years younger than I am. And then my mom had twins when I was 13. So that changed the whole dynamic of our little tiny house, because now we all had to share a small space. But it worked. You know, I was out of the house by the time I was 19, so it really wasn't that big of a deal. But it just was a really happy house. My mom was a holiday nut person. She loved holidays. Christmas was like, oh, we'd be up for hours wrapping presents. And so it was always a happy house growing up, you know, never any bad stuff. So it was a good place to be.
Do you have any vivid memories around the holidays that you can share?
Every night on Christmas Eve, my mom would read Twas the Night Before Christmas. And for my brother Mark and I, before the twins came along. And then it was upstairs, downstairs house, obviously, if it was an old farmhouse. And in the morning when we got up, we'd have to sit at the top of the stairs and wait for them to tell us we could come downstairs. And so I can just remember hitting, like, the bottom of the stairs, and they had a bay window and all the presents. And it's just like magical, like Santa really did come, you know what I mean, until... You know, but then the twins came along and that the magic was gone, because now everything was about them. But, you know, just like I said, holidays were just so special. Always, always, always. Yeah.
And are you close with your siblings?
Yep, I am. Still very close. Yep. Well, when you're 13 and they're babies, I pretty much was there from the get-go. You know what I mean? And I'm still... We eat dinner together every Thursday and make sure we stay connected. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So they're all local?
Yep, they all live here. Yep, yep. And mostly all my family lives here. Two of my mother's out of seven brothers moved away, but everybody else was here. So all my 20, there was 21 grandchildren and 19 great-grandchildren when my grandmother passed away. And so we're all, almost all of us are here except six grandchildren. Yeah. Yeah. So it's been interesting.
Can you talk a little bit about the wider area where you grew up outside the home?
Well, I lived in Stottville, as I said, and then I actually moved down south for about a year and a half, but my twin brothers were missing me. They'd call me and tell me to come home because they missed me. And so I did come home. And then I lived in Columbiaville, where I now live. So I really didn't go very far. I went about 3 miles up the road north. So, and then when I got married, my mother-in-law and father-in-law, we shared a house with them. And then we bought a house, and I've been there ever since. So really nothing exciting. It's just, you know, this pretty much the same territory, basically.
And can you tell me a little bit more about your parents?
My parents. My dad worked for the Times Union in Albany, and he retired at 62, and he died last year at 86, so he had been retired 24 years after he retired. My mom was Case Tax Service in Hudson, New York, and she was an accountant and owned her own business, and she died 2 years ago in May and still was working at 85, doing income tax returns and books. So I helped her. I was her co-leader and her, hello, this is Kate, you know, where she worked, and to tell people to come get their taxes. So, you know, we went on vacations. My mother and dad always took us wherever they went on vacation. It was never, you know, we're going, you have to stay home. They would go to Cape Cod for 2 weeks, and 1 week was for us and 1 week was for them. So we always shared vacations. We just have a really tight family. I don't know. I can't explain it any more than that. We still do. My mom's siblings that are left, we all get together at Christmas time and, you know, big occasions. And it's just a really, it's a good thing. My dad's side of the family, there's four. There's two left now. But my dad grew up in Hudson on Union Street. Actually, he grew up on Chapel Street, which is not there anymore, where the high-rise is. That was Chapel Street. And then they moved to Union Street, and that's where my dad grew up. And then my dad went to the service. He was in the Korean War and then came back and married my mom. And that whole story I've already told you, they lived in Hudson, and then we moved to Stottville. But my dad's mom and dad, my grandmother was a seamstress, and my grandfather was an upholsterer. And that's what they did for a living, you know. And we just went every Sunday and had dinner. On Fridays, before you could eat meat when you were Catholic, my nanny made fish and macaroni and cheese. That was our meal. And then when our family got too big, she stopped doing Fridays. And then on Sunday, she still did Sundays. We'd have spaghetti, meatballs, sausage, hard rolls, and a salad and a dessert. And we would all go, all of us. So I'm talking sometimes 25 people on a Sunday in one, yeah, and like standing up, eating wherever it was, you know. So my nanny did that probably till she was, I'd say probably 90, maybe 89, around there, because she died at, I think she was 94 when she passed. So that whole, even that side of my family, we're still very close. So my dad and mom are the only ones that had boys. The rest of everybody else had girls. So there's 11 of us and eight girls and three boys. It's wonderful. But my dad's sister lived upstairs and her three daughters. So no matter when you went there, you always had somebody to hang out with, you know, because they were always there. So that, and I'm still, like, they're my sisters because I didn't have any. So we're still very, very close. We get together even now, even though my nanny and grandpa aren't here anymore. My cousins or whoever, my aunt will have sometimes call everybody saying, I'm having spaghetti Sundays. Anybody want to come? So we, you know, that's how we stay connected that way on that side of the family. So, yeah, it's just a really healthy, because a lot of people don't have that. So it's nice to have, really, really nice. I'm lucky.
And you mentioned that your father passed away.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he did.
Very recently.
June 13th of last year. Yep, he did. My mom died in May 25th of the year before. She had lung cancer, and in 5 weeks she passed. She was still working. It was interesting. But my dad, he had a variety of illnesses, but I think he was heart sick. He really, really was. He was so heart sick. But the best part about that whole thing was we got to spend a whole year with my dad, just the four of us. Because my mom was the social, my dad was the sports nut. Like, you would go to chat and he would be in the den watching whatever sport, and my mom would have the conversation. So then when my mom passed, now he has to have a conversation because he's the only one there. He doesn't have a buffer anymore. And we learned a lot of things. He was a decorated war hero. We never knew that. He never, ever told any of us. Yeah, it's kind of bizarre. You know, it's like he never needed a pat, which is kind of cool, too, at the other side of that. But I don't know. It's just nice spending time with him, like we talked about. Just things, you know, things that, I don't know, I guess he just never talked about before, how his grandfather was and how his grandmother was. And I don't know, just weird. It was just kind of bizarre that we waited all these years to talk about something, you know. But luckily we had a year to do that. So, yeah, he's been gone since June 13th, my dad. But, yeah.
That's fascinating that you got to learn all these things about your father after your mom passed. Mm-hmm. Do you have any more thoughts about that or any other stories he told you?
No, because, no, he didn't really, like, go into any details. It just, like... I'll give you, for instance, my dad's grandmother and grandfather owned the Paramount Grill in Hudson. And he delivered pizzas when Columbia Street was brothels, point blank. And so he would take his little bicycle or scooter or whatever he had and deliver pizzas to the madams on Columbia Street. And never actually thought a thing about it. And he made a lot of money, obviously, because it was illegal and they, you know, shut your mouth kind of thing. And so just stuff like that we learned later on in life. I never knew about that either. And I'm like, my nanny let him do that. Why did she do that? But it was her mother and father's business, so whatever, you know. Yeah, you know, he never told us how the war was. We never knew things that happened. He never told us anything. He actually fought. He was not, like, sitting behind a desk. He never, ever brought any of that into our lives, which I'm kind of grateful for because I don't think it was a good thing, you know. But it didn't disrupt his life. He just kept, you know, pushing forward and enjoying his life, so... Yeah, I don't know. It just was a really good childhood, really good adulthood. I don't know, just really solid. If I could say it any other way, just really, I don't know, normal, with quotation marks. But yeah, it was good. It was really, really good.
It's interesting to think about how now when you see that one street, you know, his other history from before you were born with the brothels. Yeah. And I don't know if there's any other area in Hudson or in the area where you have memories of things changing or different histories there.
Not so much because Hudson really looks a lot the same as it did when I was a kid. There was a lot more bars, which is now the case too, but there wasn't for a time period. But I didn't go in bars when I was young, but there was a lot more, like, playgrounds for kids back then. You know, you didn't have electronics, so every Friday, the St. Mary's Playground would have pizza night, and they had jack tournaments and basketball tournaments and all that. So I didn't live in Hudson, but every Friday, I would come to Hudson, and then I got to go to do the park thing, because we didn't have a park out in the rural areas, you know. So that was a good thing. You know, that was fun to do. I got to meet a lot of Hudson people because I went to school in the Union Free School till I was in the seventh grade. So I started school in kindergarten and went to the sixth grade with all the same people all the time until I came to the Hudson City School District. And I probably was more fortunate than most of the kids in my class because they came and were scared to death. They had never dealt with different denominations of people where I did because I came here because I have family here, you know. The movie theater, the Hudson Movie Theater, which is now an antique, that was like the bomb when we were kids. That was the only movie theater in Columbia County. So you got to go to the movies, you know. I don't know. There's just the 7th Street Park. Everybody when I was in high school hung out at 7th Street Park. Where the bagel shop was, that we will talk about in a couple seconds, that was the Hudson Blue Anchor. Dr. two doctors, a husband and wife, opened it for youth facility. Like, you, it had a ping pong table, it had a basketball court, and they had a youth director, which they still do in Columbia County, but they don't have a facility other than Oakdale. And you would come there and hang out with all your friends from high school. So that's a nice, another nice memory that I don't know if I would have had if my parents didn't go to school at the Hudson City School District and have friends. So they still carted me in here. So yeah, I mean, I don't, other than those things, the playground probably was the highlight, and Oakdale Pond, when it was always frozen in the wintertime, so you get to ice skate all winter long. Other than that, not really. Not really. The history's still here, pretty much. It never went away, I don't think.
Well, you mentioned the bagel shop. Mm-hmm. Do you want to tell me about it?
Sure. So Karen Shara and her brother Frank Molino and her dad opened a bagel shop 30 years ago on North 7th, I'm not sure, in Hudson. And it's called Bagel Time. And then from there, they opened another shop, and then another shop, and actually opened one in Chatham at one time, too, but it didn't kind of fly out there, so they, I'm going back a long time ago, they closed it. So one day, and Karen and I grew up together, so we were not, she wasn't just my boss at the, you know, later on in life, but we were friends also. Our parents were best friends, so there goes that. She had a sign in the window one day, and it said, "Help Wanted," so I walked in and said, "Hey, just hire me." And she said, "Okay." So that's how my life started at the bagel shop. So I worked in the Valencia bagel store, and I worked 30 hours a week up there, and I did 6 to 4 shifts. And then I had a cleaning service, so I juggled. And then 3 years ago, in this coming September, they called me and asked me if I would come in and manage the Hudson Bagel Shop. I'm like, yeah, sure. So I did. And it was wonderful because a lot of the people that came there are people I knew. Where in Valencia, I didn't grow up there. So, I mean, not that I didn't know people. It wasn't the same. I had to become familiar with them. These people were already familiar to me. And so now these people that are coming in there, either they're people I grew up with or their parents or their children. So it was like, "Oh, you're such and such a kid." And they're like, "How do you know that?" And I'm, you know, just, it just was like an old home week. So it was just a really, it was a fun place to work. It really was a fun place to work. So as I say, I decided on April 26th that I retired from the bagel life, and they closed the bagel shop up here in Hudson. And now they have two bagel shops. So that was what I did for a living for quite some time. Between that and I stopped cleaning, you know, altogether when I came into Hudson full time. So that's what I did. Waited on customers and gave bagels to people. It was a fun life, though. Really a fun life.
How did you end up working in a bagel shop to begin with?
Just like I said, I walked in the door.
Walked in the door.
I just walked in the door and said to Karen, I said, "Help Wanted" on the door sign. And I'm like, just hire me. And she goes, "Okay." And so that was how it went. I didn't put an application in. I just started working. So, and then it just went on. And then Karen retired in December, the owner. So her children do it now. And now they own it. So, yeah, it just was, you know, time to go. But, and the cleaning thing, I did that for a long time. A really, really long time. Probably 20 years, at least. I had a variety of houses and businesses and a lot of different. And I just, that was too much, too, after a while, you know. I was trying to juggle working 30 hours a week at bagel time and then another 30, sometimes 40 hours a week doing, yeah, And it was just got too much. It just burnt me right out. Yeah, I'm like, I don't care if I never see a thing of Windex again, kind of a situation. But I met so many nice people, though. Oh, my God, I met so many nice people cleaning. Really, really nice people. Like, I'm just going to drop this name, and I don't know if anybody knows him. His name is David Black, and he lives in Ghent. And he's a writer. And I started cleaning for him and his wife, and she's also a writer. And we're best friends. Like, her and I go out to eat, and, you know, I just love her to death. But through them, I met Alec Baldwin, I met Chris Lawford, I met Richard Dreyfuss, I met Joan Baez. He's friends with Whoopi Goldberg, all these people. And so, but they're not any different than you and I in his house. I don't know about in the outside world, but what a experience, this country person who's, you know, I don't know. It was just like, just so different. And then for my birthday one year, they bought me tickets to a Broadway play that Alec Baldwin was in, and he brought us backstage. And so, yeah, we got to have a little chat. Not that I hadn't chatted with him before at the Black's house, but so meeting people like that who have something I've never known before was like, holy crap, this is real. You know, this isn't like TV. They're really real. They do great, you know, and that. So very interesting, very, very interesting. I've taken care of a lot of older people who I think are the best people in the whole wide world, that and little children, real partial to. I actually cleaned for a school teacher that my husband had as a school teacher. And they were third generation farmers on the same farm. Her husband's father was one of the people that would take a cart or a buggy or whatever down to the river's edge in Stuyvesant to meet the barges coming from Albany, from New York City, to put their wares on there. So that kind of stuff is like, really? Her and I would talk for hours about that. It just was so very interesting that, and I think she died, she was in her 90s when she passed away, early 80s. And just really full of their history. Do you know what I mean? And I kept saying to her, at the time there was a paper called, I can't think of the name. It was a private owned paper. I kept saying, you should call them and do a story. You're like an icon in this county. How many families can say they're third generation farmers and have this wonderful story to tell the world, as far as I'm concerned? They wouldn't do it. They would not do it. They wouldn't do it. I even went to the point where I went to the people that owned it, and the Lindquist owned it. That was her last name. And they called them, and they still would not do it. They still would not do it. But that was interesting. That was very, very interesting. They never went on vacation. They had a built-in pool on their property, and that would be their R&R. Yep. It was all about the farm. All about the farm. I mean, like, the man, his hands were all, like, you know, from arthritis and everything. He would get up every day and put this, like, liniment on it, and out the door he would go again and start all over again. He'd fridge it out, and he would be out there doing whatever. So amazing to me. So if nothing else, I've been, like, through a lot of different people in my life, and they all have, like, some kind of interest to me. I like, kind of soak it in and go, whew. I thought my life had interest. Now I meet somebody else, and they're more interesting. And, you know, so it's just it's like a globe, and it keeps going around and around, you know. And through my mom, I met so many people. My mom at one time had over 300 customers. She did. When my mom first started out, she worked for Irv Price, who was a real estate. He was a real estate lawyer, I believe. And she got to meet, like, all in the 70s and the 80s, when all, like, rock and roll and movie stars were coming up to Columbia County to buy property. She got to meet those people, and because she did all the paperwork for them, you know. And so she had a really interesting, She worked for lawyers, which was, you know, another interesting thing for her. But my mother was way before her time. She wanted to be an engineer and wasn't allowed because she was a girl. And I think it really always like pushed her to be a strong-willed, independent woman, which I'm real grateful for because she passed that on. So I got to be with her and work with her and do things with her often because I was her only help in her business. So we weren't just mother and daughter. We were really good friends, close, you know, we talked every day, for goodness sakes, we had to, but it was nice. It was really nice watching my mom and meeting people that she knew, and she would tell me backstories about people, and then she'd say, like, 3 years later, remember what I told you about? I'm like, no, I don't remember. I couldn't remember half the time because they were, like, 300 people. How do you remember that? But it was interesting. She was very interesting, my mom. My dad was quieter and laid back, but my mom was interesting. Yep.
So did your mom work all growing up?
All. My dad, when he worked for the, he worked for the Times Union, but he worked for the Knickerbocker News, which was a defunct paper now. And it's folded in 1988. And my dad went to the Times Union. They were sister papers. They were owned by the same, by the Hearst family. But when we were growing up, my dad worked the 11 to 7, because that's when papers are printed. And he would come home, and my mom would go to work. And so he would get our breakfast and get us on the bus and then go to bed, and then he was home. We never had a babysitter, ever. And then he would cook dinner, and so when my mom came home, our dinner was already ready. So my dad was like a Mr. Mom in the 60s. He was in the 60s and 70s. And he had no qualms about doing laundry, changing diapers, cleaning the house, none of that. Ever in our whole life. And he was a very good cook. So my mother had a win-win. He grocery shopped. She had a win-win. She was like pampered and didn't even know it. My mom worked for my whole life. My whole life. Yep. I don't ever remember her not working. Even after she had my brother, she took a little bit of time off because, of course, twins are a little bit different situation. But, she worked. Yep. Yep. And when we had to have a sitter, we always went to her grandparents. We never went to, like, our relative, a cousin or something. An older cousin would come and babysit. But, nope. We were very fortunate. Really, really fortunate. My mother was on the school board. She was in the town something or something. I don't remember what. She was just one of those hands-on, really in the community kind of people. She was, before she even passed, she had a scholarship on a scholarship committee for Hudson, the Hudson City School District, through the Alumni Association. She did that for, I don't know. I can't tell you. I really do. I can't. I can't even come up with a number. But for a really, really, really long time, she was the head of that committee. And she always tried to give back to the community, which I think everybody needs somebody like that in their life, so you know that you need to give back to, you know. So I try to do that. Like if somebody needs me, I'm like, if I can, I'd go to help them. If I can't, I just can't. But I always, my mom always did. So, and, you know, I saw the satisfaction she got out of it. So yeah, I kind of do the same thing. Yeah.
Going back to the houses that you cleaned, it seems like such an interesting job to see mm-hmm. how people live. And mm-hmm. It seems like you could write a book after that.
I could, believe me.
I don't know if there's any other experiences that you had or just, it also must have been very physical.
It was very physical. And I think that what happened is I got older. I'm still kind of OCD about all that anyway. I have like this, everything has its home and I like to clean. But the upstairs, downstairs part of cleaning was just getting too much, dragging things up and dragging things down. And so I got to the point where anybody I cleaned for from that point when I realized I couldn't keep up that was one floor. It was just a rant. And so then I was good with that too. But I think that when I started, when I went to Bagel Time full time, and not just the 30 hours, I couldn't do it anymore. I just said, I cannot get up at 4:30 in the morning. And I did for a little while. I did a couple houses for a little while. I get out of work at 1:30 and go clean a house. And I just finally said, I physically and mentally can't do this anymore. I'm exhausted. I would go home and feel like an Oompa Loompa. I was just like, had no zip energy. And I'm like one of those people that have a little bit too much energy. And it almost made me feel mentally drained more so than physically, because I was trying to keep it up and keep it up, and I just couldn't do it anymore. So all the people that I had when I was doing that, I kind of called them. Well, I didn't call. I went, and I just said, I just can't do this anymore. It's nothing to do with you. I love you people. I'm happy here. But physically and mentally, I can't keep this up anymore. But I won't leave until you find somebody. And by that time, I only had three houses. Actually, I still do a business. I'm never going to give it up. But I'll get into that in a minute, too. But they were all older people. Two of them were retired school teachers, and I use the word older lightly because they were the youngest, probably in their 70s. And then another husband, wife, and mother, he was a retired gym teacher. She was a retired school nurse, and his mom is still alive. I believe she will be 107 or 105 or 6 or something in July. They are still alive. So I was not going to just walk away from them because they needed help. You know, some people just don't want to do their house. So, you know, so eventually they found somebody and I was able, but I'm still friends with them. I go to visit them and check on them and make sure they're okay and all that. But I do still clean a business, and I've had it for probably almost 20 years. And I only do it because it balances out and it saves. I use it for vacation, honestly. And I don't have to, I can do it on Saturdays and it's not during the week. And I probably will never give it up because there's nobody there like here right now. And it's quiet and it's like almost good. It's good for the head. It's really good. So yeah, I'll probably keep that for a long time until I just can't do it anymore.
And can you talk a little bit about the day-to-day in the bagel shop, like what you had to do there?
Sure. I would pick the bagels up every morning, Monday through Friday, and bring all the bagels into the bagel shop with me and set them in their bins by flavor, and then make all the coffees, get all the cream cheeses ready to go, turn on the lights, turn on the coolers, get the microwaves, get the soups out, get those ready, make sure the toaster is on. And by 5:30, even though we never opened till 6 o'clock, I would have customers because they knew the back door was open because I came in the back door. And so it would start from there. And it was a very, very busy place to work. Really no like half an hour lunch. There was no such thing as that ever. But okay, because the pace was so, your day went snap, you're done. You know, like you look at the clock and, oh, it's only 11. And then I go, oh my God, it's 1:30. You know, it just like, it was just always, there was always some interaction with people or making something or preparing for the next day. Or like we had to do cream cheeses for the cooler. So if you or a customer came in to buy bagels, they could buy the flavored cream cheeses or the plain cream cheese. That had to be done. You had to stock the cooler. You had to get the lettuces and the tomatoes ready for the next day. There was always a prep for the next day. And you could, and the lady I worked with, Jenny, she had been there for 16 years. We couldn't just walk away and not do for the next day, where today people don't really get too overly excited about that. They'd rather go in earlier, and I'd rather get it done now, and then when I go in the next day, it's ready for me. But and then you had to clean. You had to sweep, mop, vacuum, all that. do the microwaves, empty the garbages. All that was in one day, every day, Monday through Friday. Yep, every day. You know, and ordering, I had to do the ordering like for the cream cheeses once a week, and then your meats, you know, your hams or whatever, your dressings for your salads, you know, all that. That was part of my job too, ordering, you know, keeping that and the stuff in stock, and decorating. I got to decorate for the holidays. But that was another place that everybody was very familiar. Everybody that came in there had been going there for a long, long, long time. A long time. Janice, who was the manager for years, probably a good 25 years, she retired, but she was Karen's cousin, first cousin, the owner's cousin. So, you know, it just became like, okay, so we're just going to keep this rolling, and it's going to be everybody familiar, and it's like Cheers, only it's a bagel shop. And that's basically what it was. Really, it really was. It was a really fun job. Really, really fun job. Yeah. Yep. So that was my everyday thing at the bagel shop.
Can you tell me more about, like, the interaction you would have, the different types of people coming in?
Sure. Most locals, most, and so I'm going to say probably 80% were local people. In the morning, early morning, you would have people going to work, you know, moms, dads, grandmas, grandpas. Then school people, before they were going to school, their mom and dad were out in the car dropping them off for bagels. And then workers, county, state, city workers, you know, like your sweepers, moppers, whatever. That was probably around between 9 and 9:30, maybe, in that ballpark. And then probably around 10:30, then your luncher people came, started. Like, they would order, that we had an app, a Bagel Time app. They could send in on an app, and then it would print out. And that would be for later on, lunchtime. And so lunch sometimes would go from, it maybe start at 10:30 and then maybe start at 12:30. There was this note, like, you could never figure it out. It was like, okay, Jenny, what is today going to bring? Are we going to have an early lunch or a late lunch? So you just really never knew. But probably by 1 o'clock, quarter after 1, it kind of would die down a little bit. And then I'd try to leave at 1:30, which I didn't do very often, but then Jenny would get a little influx of school kids again when they got out at 2:30. They want another bagel or a bag of chips or a drink or whatever. So it just varied. Most of them were 80%, though. Definitely were local people. Yeah, definitely. Walkers, a lot of walkers. And then every once in a while you get, like in the summertime, the driving classes, they would all come. Like their driving instructor and all the kids that were in the car with them, 5 or 6 of them, they'd all come to the bagel shop. And so you knew that was coming like in July and August, you know. So you kind of, I don't know, it's just like by the time, almost 3 years, you just knew what the routine would be almost every day. You didn't know how it was going to be time-wise, but you knew somewhere there would be the same kind of situation, but different times. Yeah. Pretty much, you know.
And was there anyone that came in that, like, you hadn't seen for many years when you started working there that you reconnected with?
I don't think so.
No.
No. Nope, I don't really think so. Nope. I can't think of anybody that maybe. I mean, I did see people I hadn't seen in a long, long time, but they probably, I mean, one person comes into mind, but he was younger, and so I hadn't seen him in a long time. But we weren't friends anyway before that. No, I don't think so.
No. And, like, what kind of conversations would you have with the people that came in? Like, what would they tell
you? If I had time?
If you had time. Did you have time?
Not very often.
Okay.
Well, like, you know, there was a couple of people that I'm still friends with, that I grew up with, and a backstory to one of them is My mom did their dad and mom's tax return. And the mom passed away, and the dad is still alive. And my mom and him became friends. And one time she was up to the hospital for I'm not even sure what, and he was having some issues, and they discharged him, and he was going to walk home, and she drove him home. And so then they sat in the car and talked, even though they probably talked in April or whatever when he had his taxes done. So his daughter and I, and now his younger daughter and I, are friends too, because I met her through the bagel shop. Even I knew her, but I didn't really know her before the bagel shop. So like when she would come in, the daughter that's my age, and I always say, "How's your dad?" And we'd have a conversation about that. "Oh, he's doing good." And I said, "Yeah, we're going to retire on the 26th. Oh, that's his birthday. So I got to know when James's birthday is now. Those are the kind, you didn't have a lot of time to have a conversation, but we always said good morning and have a good day to people. And, "Oh, you're going on vacation?" That's, I would say 90% of the time that was a topic of conversation. "Oh, I'm going on vacation next week." "Oh, where are you going?" "Oh, have a good time." So most of the time that was the conversation. Or if somebody had little kids, like Poppy, "She's so cute," you know, that kind of thing. That would be the conversation about people's children. And, "Oh, look how big you're getting." Or, you know, really not. You didn't really have time to have a real lengthy conversation or entailed about anything. You know, just short little visits.
But you still get to keep up with people.
Oh, yeah. It was wonderful. Really, really nice. Like, "Oh, my son had a baby." I don't even know who your son is, you know. But, "Oh, that's so nice." You know, that kind of a... And still, honest to goodness, it's so funny. Just 2 weeks ago, I'm in the grocery store, and this lady follows me in the bathroom and says, "She's got to go to the bathroom," which I'm going to put that in there. I thought at first she was stalking me, and she says, "I can't believe you closed the bagel time. Why'd you do that? I miss you so much." Holy crap, because I had to retire. I'm sorry. I don't know what else to say, you know. But we just had such really good customers, really, really, really good customers. And so I get where they're coming from, but, I mean, they're happy that we retired, but the other side of them is like they miss – people would come in, they didn't have to tell me what they wanted. I'm one of those has one of those kind of memories, and I see people now and I'm like, "Oh, how's your poppy seed bagel, toast with cream cheese? I don't know your name, but nice to see you." And it's just, that's the way it is. So because I put myself out there for their food, we became familiar, really, for, you know. They were happy about that because they didn't have to talk. They just came in the door and I made them their bagel. So I think that the bottom line is people like that. They like that, that I cared enough to remember who they were and what they were going to eat.
Yeah, that's unusual.
Yeah, it is very unusual. And everybody doesn't have that talent. And it is a talent. You know, it just is. And so I would be somewhere with my husband and hi, and he'd say, "I don't know. I could tell you what they eat, but I don't know their name. I'm really sorry." But as the years went on, of course, now I do. But in the beginning, I didn't know who they were, most of the people. But they're very – bagel people are very consistent in the bagel that they eat. Very. They all get – they do. And so, you know, it just becomes like you're going to school and you studied and you just remember. It just happens. It just happens.
You kind of have your mom's probably memory for numbers and that type of
thing. I don't have the numbers quality that she had, but I have that. Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of weird, but I still, and everybody's like, "Oh, you'll forget about it sooner or later." I don't think I will. I just don't, because they were repetitive customers. They came, I had customers that came every single day, 5 days a week. Yeah, and so when that happens, of course you're going to remember what they eat because they don't change it. They may go from a bagel toasted with cream cheese to the same bagel but toasted with butter, but they're going to get, 90% of them get the same bagel every single time. Every time. So, yeah, I just made that part of my job to remember what they're going to eat, you know.
And was there anyone who stayed there for like a long time just to hang out?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
We had customers that would come and visit,
Yeah.
try to visit, and I mean, sometimes they'd stay for an hour just sitting there, and then they'd talk to people that would come in, and yeah, there were not a lot, but the same people were the people that stayed to visit all the time, you know. Yeah, yes, for sure. And then the other interesting thing is, there was people that would come back to New York, like say they lived in Alabama, and they come back here to visit, and they would come in and say, "I just got in last night. This is the first place I came when I got up today because I miss these bagels so much." I'm like, kidding? Are you kidding? I just can't. I don't know. And yes, honestly, that was true. Yes, it was. Yep.
So people really are going to miss this bagel shop.
Yeah, well, now they can go to Greenport. They don't have to go too far. But it just was, that was where they grew up getting their bagels. So, you know, some people don't like change, unfortunately. But yeah, I think that it just was such a staple for 30 years. That's a long time. And so you saw them grow up, and now they're married, and their kids aren't coming in. So it's just like, you know, yeah, like a revolving door almost. It's interesting. But yeah, it was a wonderful place to work. Excuse me, I totally recommend that anybody that can work with the public does it one time in their life. I think it's really important. You get to see the other side of when you have never worked with the public and you go somewhere and you're going to be having a bad meal or whatever. If you're on the other side, like I have been, it doesn't necessarily mean that I made that bad meal. You know what I'm trying to say about that? And I think that sometimes people's patient level is terrible because they're so entitled and they want things right now. And if you were on the other side, you would see that that cannot happen, that there's a process. And so I think that everybody should work with the public once. You learn how to have more kindness. Everybody's different. You know, everybody has a different, you don't know everybody's isms. So I don't know. I think it's really important. So I guess that's why I did it for such a long time. It was a good job. It was really a good job. I've worked in a lot of jobs. I have had many, many, many jobs. But I will tell you, it was probably my favorite. It was my favorite job, for sure. Yep.
And why was it your favorite?
Just because of the people. Just because of the fast pace. I worked for the state of New York in taxation and finance. It was the worst job I ever had in my life. I was so bored. Honest to goodness, it was the most boring job I ever had. I fell asleep at my desk. Nobody woke me up to take the bus home. I had to call my mom to come get me. That's how bored I was. It was terrible. I cannot be bored. I need stimulation. And so bagel time was that kind of a job. You had no downtime. You were just going, 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 going. I like that. You know, so yeah, I think that's probably, and the cleaning. I like to clean. I don't really mind it. Yeah, but that's my job, my own business, so it's a little bit different. But yeah, it was probably the best job I ever had, hands down.
Did you like it just as much when you lived at the other location when
When
it
I worked at the
wasn't?
other one?
Yeah,
Yeah.
you did.
I did, yeah, I did. I think that I liked Hudson better. Because it was more active, because there was only two of us. Most bagel times have either three, well, some of them have two people once a week, but most of them have three or four people. We only had two always. So sometimes I felt a little bored at the other one because there was just too many of us and not enough, not just customers, but things to do, you know? So I really. Once I got to Hudson and got in the groove of the way that was being worked there and changed a few things, oh yeah, I was much happier in Hudson than I was in Volusia. Yeah. Yep. Actually, I had people from Volusia would come to Hudson to see me, which is kind of cool. Yeah. Yep.
think people probably think you own it.
Well, they did. And they thought Jenny did too, because she was there forever. You know, they say, do you own it? Jenny's like, no, we just work here. Yep. Yep. And Karen and I are kind of, we're kind of built alike, and we've been friends forever. So, you know, people would see us together growing up or whatever. So they probably, you know, you're the owner, aren't you? I'm like, no. I don't want it, so, you know.
So this is fascinating, not to switch topics so much, but can you tell me about your husband?
Sure. We have been together for 32 years. We have a daughter that's 31. He works in the manufacturing industry. He's been at the same job for 26 years, I think. I met him. I knew who he was for a long time. You know, here you go again, the same county and all that. He was very young. He's 9 years younger than I am. But, yeah, we just got along right from the get-go, and we've been together ever since. I don't know. They're really... we're total opposites. He's... not as social as I am. And when I first met him, and these huge families, Italian and Polish, you know, and they all talk a lot and they're loud, and he would just sit there. And I was like, oh boy, this, I don't know, poor thing. I mean, it's like the shark attack, you know. But after all these years, he just kind of blended in eventually, and he's a lot more social than he used to be. But he's a drummer. He loves music. He likes motorcycles. He's got a lot of hobbies. He shoots a bow. He shoots in an archery league. And yeah, he just, you know, he kind of does his thing. I do my thing, but my mom and dad were like that. So it's kind of, that's why we still get along, I think. Yeah.
And can you tell me about your daughter?
Yeah, she's a phlebotomist at the hospital. She went to Ichabod Crane. She didn't go to Hudson High School. She didn't know what she wanted to do. She was a really good student, and, you know, she had good grades and stuff, but didn't know. And then I think 3 years ago, somewhere in that time period, she decided she was going to go take a phlebotomy course, and... that's how she got her job. She moved out of our house a year ago, May. She didn't live home for 7 years, came back, and then moved back out again. She has no children. She's not married. She does have a significant other. They've been together 3 years, I think, in February. She's not social. I mean, she's more social than my husband was, but she likes her own time. She likes to just stay home and hang out with her animals, and, you know, she's just kind of laid back and doesn't try to let the world get to her too much. Yeah, but she's really, I mean, like every Thursday she comes to dinner too, like I was telling you before. So her and my brothers and I and my husband, we eat dinner together. She doesn't have anything exciting to tell you, though. She's not just like, she's just kind of like, she's there.
And you guys are close?
Yeah, oh, very, very close. Yeah, we're very close. Yeah. Yeah, we have just like this, it's unusual because you don't hear about that often, but we just have this really, we all have this really tight family relationship. I don't know. It's just kind of bizarre. I wish more people had it. You know, that they, I just have a big family pool and I can visit and do whatever anytime with any of them. I mean, I don't even feel like, I don't know, I can just walk in their door. You know what I mean? It's just always welcoming, all my family. But yes, Emily and I are very close. She's very close with her dad. And my husband's dad died 2 years ago in April. And Emily was very close to him. Well, we all were very close to him, obviously. So now Emily, in that 2 years period of time, lost three of her grandparents. She lost my father-in-law, my mom, and then my dad last year. So my husband's mom is still alive. So she's very close to her, too, because we live right next door to them. So my mother-in-law taught her how to shop, because I'm not a shopper. And so she has a shopping gene. And her grandmother are close. They always have been. Yeah. And my mother-in-law's only, what is she? Let me think about this for a minute. 12 years older than I am. So, you know, it's like having a sister, not just a mother-in-law. So her and I are close too. Like today we did that course together that I was telling you about. Yeah. So that's all about Emily. I don't know. You know, we have a dog, two cats right now.
Mm-hmm. And just going back to this idea that you lost both of your parents mm-hmm. in the last few years, is there anything else that seems important to mention about the process of them being sick or losing
sure.
them?
Yeah. I think there's, my mom had lung cancer. And she made the decision to go to St. Peter's and have chemo and never asked any of us. She never even took my dad or any of us into her appointment with her, which I found kind of bizarre. So it led me to believe that she knew more than she ever told us about that. But anyway, she goes to St. Peter's and has intensive 3 days of chemo. I mean, really bad. And became really like wacky, just like talking nutsy stuff and doing. So anyway, they decide they're going to discharge her, and they bring her to the nursing home in Catskill. And I go to visit her, and she's like, I'm like, oh my goodness, this is like not normal at all. My mother was so out of it. It was just like so weird. And so then what happened was she ended up, the Pines, they ended up taking her to the hospital. And she was in ICU, and I think she was there about, I want to say, 11 days. Yeah, 11 days. And she died there. But before that ever happened, she said, I said to her, what do you want to do? Before she got to the point where I didn't know what the heck she was talking about. Do you want to have heroics or not have heroics? Because I'm not going to be the one who makes that choice. And I don't want to put Dad in that position. But if we're all on the same page, then we'll go with whatever your wishes are. She didn't want to she did not want to be resuscitated. Okay, that was one. But she did want to try one more time. So we're in the ICU and her kidneys are now failing. And so they call me at work. And my brother Andrew was a health proxy at the time. They called him. He called me. What do we do? I said, well, what does Mom want to do? I said, I'll be up. So I left work and I went up there and I said, okay. And she had a tube. She was intubated by then. Mom, do you want to go one more round or just call it quits? What do you want to do? Do you want to do the kidney dialysis? And she shook her head yes. So we did, because it was her choice again. But it didn't work. It did not work at all. But we never got to talk to her. You know, like, so there was no closure. So I so wish that she didn't go about what she did the way she did it, because I not that it wouldn't have happened, that she wasn't going to pass, I know that, but we had no time to like talk to her about, you know, anything. So that was really, it was really sad. Really, really sad. And then she, of course, still owned a business. And so that was a nightmare, because now me solely have to get in touch with all these people because nobody else knew them but me. So I had to leave work, go to the office, call people, leave work, go to the office, call people every day until I caught up with whoever she had done their taxes for and whoever she had started and not finished. So it was just like a nightmare. Luckily, my mom's youngest brother lives in Texas. He was here. So him and his wife cleaned it. You know, they started going through file cabinets and taking care of that for me. And then they went to the transfer station with whatever could go to the transfer station. You know, there was a process there. So anyway, that got done. But before that even happened, my mom befriended a man who I worked with in the hospital 50 years ago. Not 50, 45. He was without any family. And so my mom was his health proxy and power of attorney. He had a stroke in March before my mom died, ended up in Albany Med, and now my mom is sick. So she can't go help him. I can't go help him. I have to be here for her. So I just kept calling every day to make sure, you know, what they were doing. I talked to him on the phone. So then my mom passes. So now he's still alive. I'm his health proxy and power of attorney. So he ended up going to the nursing home for rehab, but he can't leave. He has no, like, strength anymore. So my mom died in May. Ray got to go to the nursing home in July. June, they decided. The end of June, they decided he was going to be there for good. I had to go clean his apartment out. So not only was I doing the office in Hudson and got that all, thank God I had brothers that were helping. And my dad helped as much as he could, which wasn't too much. But I pretty much did that whole apartment all by myself. I would go after work, box up stuff, open the doors, and went around to the neighbors in the apartment complex and said, does anybody want any of this stuff? I didn't need any of it. And there, you know, so I gave probably 90% of his stuff away, his furniture. But he was a Hallmark collector. He had thousands of Hallmark ornaments, thousands. I had probably 8 to 9 boxes. I don't mean like little box, hat boxes. I mean tote size of Hallmark ornaments. And tools, tons of tools. So when we were done, in a week's time, I emptied that whole apartment and had it cleaned out. Yep, in a week's time. So that all went on. I mean, it was just like one of those crazy situations. So after everything was said and done, and then my dad started having health issues, it was like, oh my God, here we go again. Here my father-in-law, my father-in-law died of cancer also. He had mesothelioma. That's a whole other story too. It's just like been a whirlwind of whatever, you know. But as I told you before, I'm just so glad we had my dad for a whole year. That was really like the highlight of my life, I think, because I got to be with him for the whole time. And I was there when he died all by myself, which is like a wonderful thing. My dad said to me when he got really sick, you'll make sure everything's done right, won't you? I said, yep. I knew exactly what he was talking about, that I wasn't going to go heroics or any of that, because that isn't what he wanted. So we went to the doctors one day, and they were like, oh, you know, he's got this, and he has congestive heart failure and blah, blah. I'm like, yep. And, well, we're going to have to do this, and we're going to have to do that. You're going to have to come back in 2 days. And it was like a chore just getting him there. So we get in my car, and I said, are you done? And he goes, yeah. I said, well, I am too. So I took him home, and I called up every doctor and said, we're not coming back. He's done. There's not one thing you people can do for him anymore. We're done. So that was probably 2 weeks later. He told me he needed hospice. It was time for hospice. And so I called hospice. They came, and I think they came on a Saturday, and he died that following Tuesday. So about 9 days later, he passed away. Nope, he died on a Wednesday. But I had taken Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday off to stay overnight and, you know, do the night shift. And so nobody was there but me and him when he passed. And so it was really nice, really nice. So I got to see him go, like, in peace, thank God, you know. My father-in-law, he got mesothelioma from the service. He was a ship dismantler. So anything he touched with asbestos in his lifetime contributed to the mesothelioma. And that's what eventually killed him. Yep. So, and he was a butcher, my father-in-law. He was the coolest man. Oh my God, he was the coolest man. Really nice. He's a really nice guy. Just funny. Just really, really a good guy. So, yep. That's that story on him.
So we're at like 1 hour and 4 minutes. We have like 25 more minutes. Is there anything else that you feel like we should talk about that we haven't talked about?
I don't know. Like, what else do you want me to tell you about? I mean, I don't know.
I'd be interested to hear anything that you want to talk about.
I don't know. I can talk about my mom's mom and dad a little bit. My grandfather was he worked for Electron, which put up lightning rods and all that stuff. My grandmother's, my mom's mom, this is who I'm talking about, her mom and dad, her mom was in an institution because she had epilepsy, which they didn't know at the time. They thought she was mentally ill. And so my grandmother's older sister raised her. And that's who my mom was named after, my grandmother's older sister. But her dad owned hardware stores in Hudson, and he was a predominant businessman in Hudson. He was from Germantown, but that, you know, he came to Hudson and started businesses. Well, my grandmother's brother, my grandmother's brother worked for my grandmother's dad in a hardware store they had in Hudson, and they got robbed one day, and my grandmother's brother got shot and killed. So everything that my grandmother's father worked for all his life kind of went down the tubes because he started drinking and became a severe alcoholic. So he lived with my mom, and there were 7 kids in my mom's family. And so when I was growing up, I never met him. If he was alive, I was little, and I don't remember anything about him. But my mother just said he was a really wonderful man at one time of his in his life, but he had so much tragedy, you know, he just couldn't handle it. But my mom's mom and dad, when I was a kid, and I'm going back when I was like 2 years old, they lived in a house with no running water. They had a pump for their kitchen water. You went to the bathroom in a potty, a porcelain potty, God's honest truth. And they had an outhouse, and they had no heat, only in one room with vents that went upstairs. But my grandmother, oh my God, everybody should have a grandmother like her. She bought whatever food you like, she bought. Even though she was so poor, it was pathetic. If you liked Wise potato chips, she bought Wise potato chips. If you liked red liquid, she had all these grandchildren, and she had everybody got what they liked when they came to her house. And I spent an awful, awful, awful lot of time with my grandmother. Like, always. Even when I became an adult, her and I went on vacations together, and we did the crossword puzzle and the TV guide together. We just did everything together. She was the coolest grandmother in the whole wide world. Oh my God, she was so cool. She got her ears pierced when she was 80. She went in a hot tub when she was in her 80s. I mean, she was just the coolest. My grandfather on the other side, on the other coin, he was brought up Polish. My grandmother was Scottish, Dutch, and German. But my grandfather's mother and father, I never met them, but I heard that they were tyrants. Tyrants. Like farmers, and didn't put up with anybody, any of their children's nonsense. And so I'm kind of glad I never met them. They didn't like my grandmother. She didn't fit into their mold, and you know, they just were not nice people. I probably shouldn't even tell you that, but it doesn't matter. They're all not here. So when my mom was young, they all went to the aunt's house that raised my grandmother to take their baths, and which they could walk to, and then they'd come home. And so that's how they lived. My grandmother had 3 bedrooms, my grandfather had 1, her boys had a great big room with 2 bunk beds on one side and maybe 2 on the other, but they all slept in the same room, and the girls all slept in one bed. Me, I slept with my grandmother when I was there. She had a bed downstairs in one of the rooms that was off the kitchen. And she lived there a really long time until her sister died, my aunt. And then she left the house to my grandmother. And then my grandmother moved in that house. And they took her old house. Somebody bought it. and moved it across the river and restored it. Because it was like an old Gothic kind of Victorian, you know, with the shake shingles and all that. It was really, really old. They moved it across the river. And then my grandmother and grandfather lived in the house that her sister left to them. And then when she passed, my grandfather passed first, she left it to one of my mother's brothers. So it's still in my family. All these years later, it's still in my family. Yeah. Yeah. Yep, it is. Yep.
Okay. So we're recording again. Is there anyone else that you, any other meaningful relationship that you want to tell me about?
No, I don't think so. Not really.
We've talked about your childhood and sort of transition the last few years with your parents. How do you see, I know you have a large extended family, but how do you see... You've retired, your parents have passed, any thoughts about going forward, the future?
Not really. I don't know. Like, I even though I retired, I already have a part-time job because I got bored. But because my family is still all here, I don't ever think that dynamic is going to change. I just don't see it ever happening. If my daughter moved away, I would go with her wherever she went because she's the only child I have. But other than that, I think my family's going to stay the way it is, all of them. We're just all really based here, and we're happy here. So, and the ones that don't live here, I'm friends with all of them. My mother's oldest brother moved to Pittsfield. He worked for the GE, and then from there he went to Daytona Beach, and from there he went to Wilmington. So they've been away for 50 whatever years, but they would come home every summer and visit, you know, stay for a week and bring all the kids, and they'd all come to visit. We always went there. That's where I lived when I moved to North Carolina, moved with them for a little bit. I go sometimes twice a year to go visit them. I also have a cousin on the other side, on my dad's side, that lives down there. I'm close with her. So even though they're not here, we're still really, still have that bond going on, you know? Like when we're together, you wouldn't think, we just never missed a beat. We just kind of, doop, we're back at it again. You know, we're all still crazy and laughing and remembering things that happen and, you know, stuff like that as childhood. When I was a kid, the ones that live in North Carolina now, they lived in Pittsfield and they had a laundry chute in their house. I never knew what a laundry chute was. We used to throw things down and run down two flights of stairs to see if we could catch it in the basement. And now a lot of people have them. It's like not uncommon, but just stuff like that, you know. We get together and we talk about that kind of stuff, and here we are in our 60s now and still thinking about throwing things down the laundry chute and chasing after them down the stairs. So we will always have that because we have always had good memories of being together as even young. And then when we were, when they lived in Pittsfield, and we would go camping with them to Cape Cod or Maine. So we always had that bond because of that too. Our parents always made sure that we stuck together, you know, even though they didn't live here. So yeah, I don't think anything will change. I don't know, unless you never know though. You know, every day is different, so you don't really know. But I'm happy here, so I'll probably continue to stay here. I really think I'll be okay here. I don't know, we'll see. But for now it's good.
Can you tell me about your tattoos?
Yes, I can. Which one do you want to know about? Okay, so when I was 27 years old, I got my first tattoo. My mother had a stroke. Not really, but she really was not very happy, but it is what it is. And so now I have, I believe, like 11 of them. I have 11. Everyone has a little special something. I have a portrait of my daughter. I have Tinkerbell because she's so tank. I have a breast cancer ribbon for a couple of friends. I have a another ribbon for, I had a cousin that passed away last year with my dad, a first cousin at 50. She had cancer. So I have that. I have a group of friends that I've had since high school, and we like Cosmos. So I have flowers with Cosmo glasses in them. I have the dancing bears from the Grateful Dead. I have things I found in the ocean as tattoos, like shark's teeth and starfish. And where I go to the beach in North Carolina, they have turtles that are, the moms come out of the water and lay the eggs, and then I've seen them come out, the little babies. So I have those. So every tattoo I have has pretty much a meaning to it. They're not just because I wanted them. You know, I have this one right here that I'm showing you is my mom and dad's signature off of their Social Security card with the year they were born. They were both born in 1932. They were two weeks apart in age, exactly 2 weeks apart. So that's my mom and dad. And then this one I just got in March, this is a tribal mother and daughter with our birth flowers. So that's my tattoos. I don't know. And I'm probably never going to stop. And right now I'm uneven, to be honest, so I've got to have one more. But yeah, so that's when it started quite some time ago, you know. The one I got originally, it was just a little rainbow with a dove in the middle, like open-winged dove. And then with my daughter Emily, because she has tons of them, when she turned 18, she wanted a tattoo. So I went with her and had that one redone. So I had it made into more of an ocean scene and, you know, a little bit more intricate than it was in the beginning. And so, yeah, but every one of them is, there's a special something there for them, for sure. Yep. My favorite, of course, is my signature, my mom and dad, and my daughter, of course. Those are my two favorites. And then my, as I said, Emily has a lot of tattoos. She's got sleeved and she has, and then my husband, probably 3 years ago, decided he was going to get a tattoo and never had one. And so now he started. So now he's on the bandwagon too now. Yep.
And you only had one child?
Only one. I actually lost a baby in November. It'll be, Emily was 26 years ago in November. I was due to go in for a C-section, and I went for my last checkup, and there was no heartbeat. And so the cord was wrapped around his neck, so I had a baby with fetal demise. He weighed 9 pounds, 6-something ounces. He was a big baby. That was a nightmare. That's probably the worst nightmare that I've ever had in my life. Because I had to try to keep it together because I had a 5-year-old kid. And I didn't want to go home and be a basket case. So they sent me from the doctor's office right to the hospital to have another ultrasound to make sure. And then wanted to know if I wanted to go in and stay overnight and go into the OR the next day. I said, no, I got to go home. I have a 5-year-old. So I went home. And my aunt, she lives on the other side of the street from me. She had Emily. I think my mother-in-law went and got her for me. And I set her on my kitchen table, and the people next door he was a minister. He was our friend. He came over. So I said to her, I told her what happened, that Evan had, the cord was wrapped around his neck, and that he was not going to come home with mommy. I was going back into the hospital in the morning. And that he was in heaven. And this is the answer I got. Mom, Evan will be fine. He's in heaven with Grandpa and Uncle Fred. So my whole life changed. It was sad and all that, but for that little 5-year-old to have that knowledge of that there really isn't anything I could have done about any of it, and that we're just going to move on. And so, unfortunately, I had my tubes tied, which they should have never, ever done that. Because I was under such duress over that whole situation. My mom wasn't here. She was in Cape Cod. So my dad called her. So she was on her way back. I don't remember if she made it before I went to the OR or not. And I really don't think so, because she would have never let them do that. But my aunt, my mother's sister, was an OR nurse, so she was there, thank God. So I was surrounded by people that, and I had friends because I worked at the hospital at one time that were there. But I was adamant about tying my tubes. And so in the middle of the operation, I'm knocked out, he came out and asked my husband if he could not tie them. He didn't want to. And Bob said, but she wanted you to. And I wish he would have said, well, I'm not going to do it today, but I'll do it tomorrow if she changes her mind. Because then, of course, as the time progressed, it was the stupidest thing I've ever done in my life. I wanted a baby. I didn't want Emily to be an only child. And then I couldn't get pregnant. So my doctor at the time, she was a PA, she went to my insurance company, unbeknownst to me, and fought that. And they did a reversal, a tubal reversal, but it never worked. But I didn't pay one dime. I never saw a bill. I never saw anything for the whole thing. Because she felt that same way I did, even though I was adamant, they should have said, no, we can't do that. Your mind isn't in the right place right now, and we need to make sure that, you know, this is something that is going to be a lifelong thing. So I never got pregnant again. But just Emily saying that, you know, like it just always made it a little easier to live with, if I can say it that way. But that probably was one of the worst things that's ever happened, because I didn't want her to be an only child. I wasn't. I you know. So what I did instead, I started babysitting, and I had like way too many children at my house at one time. Way too many. My husband would come home and like have a stroke. But I didn't want her not to know how to play with other children, because I didn't know how to. I couldn't keep her company for 24 hours a day. I would have been crazy. You just can't, as a mother, do that. So I just kept babysitting for kids, my neighbors, the whoever, and I took her to daycare and made sure she had day. You know, went to the preschool kind of thing or whatever, and so she was more well-rounded than if it was just her and I, you know. But luckily she has a lot of cousins, because she just never worked out that any other way. But yeah, that's pretty much my story about that.
Well, we've got like 5-8 more minutes. Technically, we can end any time, but I don't know if you want to end on that story, if there's anything else about that you want to talk about in terms of that experience.
No, it just was really bizarre. It really was bizarre. I mean, you just never know. You never expect to be in that situation. And then afterwards, they offer you counseling. Like, no, I don't need it. Well, 3 weeks later, I needed it, because I realized that it was a nightmare. It wasn't just something that happened. It was a nightmare. And there was no way to get away from it, because then I'd go to the grocery store and I'd see people with babies, and it would just haunt me. So finally I did. I went to a grief counselor. And I go there, and there's like 10 women sitting in there with the same situation I was in. And actually, I only went 3 times, because I knew it wasn't just me, that it didn't just happen to me. And I was okay. I just had to know that I wasn't the only one that ever got affected by that, you know. Today that wouldn't happen, because now they can see the cord. Years ago, the ultrasound didn't show the cord. It was transparent. Now they know it's there. So it'll probably hardly ever happen today. But 26 years ago, there was just no way to see it. No way. Nope, no way. But so when people in my life now that I have had friends of mine, their children have passed away, or not infants, but children, I am such an encourager of getting help, because even though you think you are in control and the strongest person in the world, you're really not. When you're in that situation, you're not thinking clearly at all, at all. And it's like a blur almost. It really just is like a blur. But I just had such a good family. I have such a good family. If it wasn't for them, I don't know. They were just always there, always. I mean, and then a couple other things happened after that. I had a C-section, of course, with that. And I had an infection. And they had to open it up and clean it from the inside for months. Months it went on. And I had my aunts come, and they were just so helpful. I mean, I think about people that have nobody or a handful of, how lucky I am, because that's all I had to do was pick up the phone and say, I can't do this by myself. And they were there. So, you know, there goes that. Probably never leaving, because I need them. Just like they need me, I guess, you know. So, basically, that's it. My life is pretty good, though, right now. It is really good. I have a good life. I think you need struggles to have a good life. I don't think a lot of people understand that, though, until they have them. I think people think they're, I don't know. Everything is just peachy all the time. It's not. I think when you fall down sometimes and pick yourself up, you see things different. You see life and people different. You know, like right now, I work for I can't really tell you what I do, but I work for a place that deals with people with struggles. And so far, so good. But I wish more people would do what I do, because that's all I can say. It's amazing how people survive sometimes. It's really amazing. Yep. Because this isn't always what's really going on, what you see, you know? But as you get older, you learn that. You know, I just wish that you didn't have to wait so long sometimes, so you have more empathy for people and love. So, that's about it. That's my story.
Thank you so You're much welcome. For sharing.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. It's interesting. I've had an interesting life. I don't know. You know, I haven't been out of this country in my whole life, but I don't need to. I just don't need to. My grandmother and grandfather, they're from Italy. My dad's mother and father. My grandfather was born there. His father came here to get a job and left them and then sent them here. And in the meantime, my grandfather's mom had a baby that died. And so, you know, that's a whole nother part of my life that I knew about since I was a little kid. But they were just always a good family. I don't know. It's just, we just have such a, we're all a little cuckoo, but we all have a good family. Good family. You know, so. And it's nice because I've lived here. I've known this place for my whole entire life. My whole, where I lived growing up, I could tell you every single person that lived in every single house from where I lived, Route 9, all the way down through Stauffville. I could actually go door to door and tell you every single person that lived in my town. Most people can never say they could do that. No. And it was like that here. Like Union Street, I knew everybody on Union Street. So it just, it was nice growing up here. Really, really nice.
Amazing. Well, thank you.
Oh, you're always welcome. You are. It's fun.
I'm glad we got to do it.
Yeah, me too.
Here on the empty library.
Quiet. Nice quiet place.
Exactly.